Hey, everybody. This is Kevin Barbaro, and welcome to Coffee Talk 3.0. Dude, the first episode, man. And how fitting is it to today's National Coffee Day, man? I didn't even know that until I came in this. When I was on the train this morning, somebody said it was Coffee Day. You can get free coffee at D&D and some of the other places, you know what I mean? And so Coffee Talk 3.0, third edition of my Coffee Talk series, you know, kind of like a coffee table series. Mine are radio shows, man, or podcasts. And so today, anyway, I'm in the studio. I got my buddy, the Upstate Kid. You can follow him at the underscore Upstate Kid. Upstate and I did our first feature film together. Actually, my second feature film, but it'll actually come out, so it'll end up being my first feature film, but it's his debut as a writer and a director. He's here in the studio with me.
That's right.
How you doing, brother?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Living the dream, baby. Yeah.
You got notes. You got notes.
I got, yeah. Yeah. These are kind of notes that that make me who I am. Coffee stained.
Right.
You know what I mean? And scribbled up. Looks like bar cabbage. You know, it's all wrinkled. Yeah. So really, you know, today's the first episode of 3.0, Coffee Talk 3.0. And so just a kind of an overview for those people that are obviously tuning in, either live here on talkingalternative.com or that are tuning into the podcast, either here on the website at talkingalternative.com, or you can also find the podcast at coffeetalk.podomatic.com, which is my own website where I have archives, actually, of the other Coffee Talk series, Coffee Talk and Coffee Talk 2, T-O-O. So creative. So if you're tuning in, you know, obviously, you know, the deal is with the show, it's an hour long show. And you know, what I want to try to do, I want it to be informative. I want it to be entertaining. I want to inspire, man, you know, because that's who I am. Former coach, baby. I got to inspire. And it's about, you know, following the life of a working actor as he navigates his way through the business, man. And that actor being, hello, me, yours truly. But, you know, I had to start from scratch, man. And I had to figure a lot of stuff out on my own. And I made a lot of mistakes, okay? So, all of those mistakes have led to great stories, dude, and stories that people can learn from. So what I want to do every week is to have somebody from the industry, an industry professional, come in or call in and be a part of the show and make it conversational and just talk about either a project that they're doing or their career. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned. We're not preaching to everybody. It's more of just explaining how they got to where they are in their life or in their career and the stories that led to where they are. And there's a lot to be learned there. And so really, you know, the first 15 minutes of each show, what I would like to do is just kind of, you know, maybe a little review of where I've been, because it is following my life over the last couple of weeks and just stories leading up to how I even landed on an acting career and how I got to where I am right now and where I want to go, obviously. And then the last three segments, obviously, we're going to be more engaging, obviously, with whatever guest I have in the studio or on the phone with me. And Upstate, dude, feel free to chime in, brother, because I
you're doing good.
Oh, well, of course.
For part one, I'm the Robin to your Howard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you kind of look like you can be related. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, you know, the last couple of weeks have been crazy, man. I'm on like this heater. Okay, and I got to keep it going, man. Avol's putting food on the table. Well, it would be putting food on the table if everybody was paying their invoices. Now, I'm not going to name any names, but I did post this on Facebook the other day. It's like, there comes a point where you wonder what net 30 means, really, when you send out an invoice. Because I'm waiting on one particular company. I'm not going to say who it is, obviously, because I would really like to work with them in the future. But, you know, I had done an ad for somebody and done a gig. And we're talking thousands of dollars for this gig. And it was supposed to be paid out on a net 30. We're working on about 85 days now. And haven't heard a peep. So it's odd because, you know, I don't have a manager. See, this is where it'd be great to have a manager, you know, as you're working your way through the business, because then you just have the manager call. And he's the bad guy. It's good cop, bad cop, right? But when you are your own manager, because sure. you want to save the 15%, right? then you are good cop and bad cop, and you got to balance out. Right. You know, I don't want to be annoying, right? But of course, I want to eat, right?
we had to negotiate too. You and I, when we were going into shooting the feature, because we shot a feature, but it was a micro budget project.
Yeah,
and you know we had to negotiate the deal. But I feel like we were very generous, and we knew. We took care of everybody, and handed out equity, and you know, there's a little money, a little equity, and
I'm banking on that equity, baby, for the future.
You and me both.
So it's tough, you know. You got to negotiate that,
right.
It puts me in a bad position when somebody doesn't follow through. And this is the first time I've actually experienced this, where I have a client, so to speak, that hasn't followed through on the payment. And I don't want to come across as being annoying or needy or too aggressive, but at the same time, I have to look out for myself, because I am my own business.
Yeah, that's business.
Yeah. And so that's a tough thing. But in any event, I've been on a bit of a heater, man. And so I've actually filmed 4 commercials in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, as a working actor in New York City, that's tough to do.
That's a huge, most people work for, if they're lucky, they're going to get 1 commercial a year. And that's kind of what they're.
Yeah.
And
so like it's, for whatever reason, you know, I think I've just kind of found my niche, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's the biggest thing. So, when I walk into an audition, if I'm fortunate enough to be asked to audition and I walk in, I feel fairly confident in myself more than fairly confident, I'm going to be honest. I feel really confident in myself when I walk in, because I know who I am. And I think that took a little bit of time to kind of figure out. You know, I remember I was in my first kind of like acting workshop, so to speak, and we were talking about commercials. And they explained the different types of people in the different commercials. So you've kind of got like, you know, the models, and then you've got...
So that's you and me.
Well, clearly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And Sam. I think Sam could do that too. And so
Sam on the mix.
Yeah.
And, hey.
you have like your models, and then you have like fitness model types, and then you have real people, you know, so, which is a real category that they're looking for. Real people, real to attractive or whatever, you know. And so they ask everybody to type themselves. And I'm like, I kind of think I'm like, you know, the fitness model. And this lady was just like, no, you're not. I was like, oh, she's like, you're like a regular person.
And you're somewhere in between.
I mean,
gym schedule is a big part of your life. But at the same time, you have an everyman quality.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I don't have the 6-pack. I got a bit of a 4-pack. maybe a 3.5, maybe 240s.
Hey man, whatever. I got the, like, you go into the bodega and you pull the one, you know, the one bottle out. That's what I got.
Yeah, good call. And I'm more of two bottles of wine, I guess. And so you know, so anyway, you know, I had to figure out like what my type really is. And I am anybody's neighbor. That's kind of when people ask me what is your typecast? What do you typecast? What kind of a type of actor are you, or characters do you play? And I'm like, I'm literally anybody's neighbor. I'm a regular blue collar guy, and so those are the roles that I submit for.
Sure.
I don't submit for roles that I don't think I really have any chance at. I mean, obviously you want to challenge yourself, but you know there comes a point where you have to be honest with yourself too. You know what I mean? So in submitting myself for these different commercials or these different gigs, I try to focus on those. So if I'm asked to audition, you know, based on my headshot and what reel I provide them in terms of other commercials or whatever, if they ask me to come in, then I feel fairly confident that like I've got a good shot at it, because I'm confident in, I wouldn't have been confident in myself enough to even submit to audition if I didn't feel like I was fit for the role. So anyway, I've booked a tremendous amount of work, particularly over like the last 6 months, and the last 2 weeks have been crazy, man. It's been really indicative of the all-in nature of my life now. you know, my all, the all in nature of an acting career, a career in entertainment. And you're the same way, you know, you went all in, you're going all in, and you do whatever you got to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, we've worked some, you know, really crappy jobs, man,
yeah.
and continue to, but until the big one hits, baby.
Well, part of what was so cool about you asking me to come do the pod is that, you know, we're still in that grind right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to take off work from the day job to come in
exactly.
and do this. And I'm proud of that. And,
yeah.
you know, I could hold my head high,
right.
you know, to a lot of people and know
yeah,
that.
It's old school, man.
Yeah.
It's blue collar, baby. And so anyway, the last couple of weeks, it's been amazing. I did learn a couple of really valuable lessons. One particular story is that I was asked to audition to be the spokesman for an upstart website. It's like a travel website that's, you know, you go on, you try to look for hotel rooms. It's going to be kind of a business to business type of situation. It's like a 3-minute video where the company is marketing themselves to hotels around the world that are small and medium sized hotels. And so the guy sends me, you know, I sent him, you know, I'm the spokesman for Delta Dental commercials, for instance. So I sent him a couple of the Delta Dental commercials. And so this is what I look like, and this is how I speak. You know, the great thing going for me is I really have no discernible accent for the most part. And so he gets back, he's like, dude, I want you to come in, you know? So I go in and he gives me the script, and the script was incredibly wordy, dude. I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm a pretty wordy guy myself, but it was like kind of over the top.
It's a hotel commercial.
Oh, dear God. I mean, it was a lot of adjectives, and, you know, it's just, so anyway, I made one of the bigger mistakes. It was a rookie mistake in the fact that, like, you know, I'm going to wow this dude, man. I'm going to memorize it.
Why is that a mistake?
Huge mistake.
Why?
Always bring sides with you into an audition. You know what I mean? This ain't a memorization contest, man. It's about being able to bring the energy. Because a lot of times you got a teleprompter anyway, so you don't have to memorize it. You know what I mean?
Mistake wasn't that you memorize it. It's that
the mistake was I didn't bring my backup, which was the sides with me. Anyway, so I go in. He mics me up, and they put me on camera because it's for a spokesman thing, right? So. Oh man, I'm fumbling my way through it, and I'm still kind of coming with the goods, and but it's I'm sweating bullets, bro. You know, it's New York City. There's no air conditioning. Anyway, long story short, because I know we got to go to commercial for the first time. But anyway, we finished the commercial, we finished the audition, right? And I'm just like, oh God, I think I blew that. So I walk outside, and I start to head down the stairs. And I'm cussing at myself, literally cussing. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe that. And I'm like, hit my fist. I'm like, I literally just wasted my time. That was the most ridiculous thing. What was I thinking? Blah, blah, blah. As I'm walking downstairs, look down. The mic is still on.
No.
Dude, the microphone was still on my lapel.
Wait, so did you book this gig?
Dude, I still got it, man. Some miracle. The commercial gods were with me, man. So anyway, we got to go to commercial right now, and then we're going to come back. We're going to start talking about you, man, and our project together, but and your career. So I'm with the Upstate Kid. I'm Kevin Barbaro. This is Coffee Talk 3.0. We'll be back with you in just a second on Talking Alternative.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Hassania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is a common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Yeah. I'm in the mood now.
This is
baby.
What a Barbaro podcast
That's
is.
That's it, man.
Love it.
That's great, brother. So yeah, anyway, lesson learned there on making sure that you've taken the microphone off before you're cussing at yourself. I was impressed that I ended up actually even, you know, booking the gig. And but, you know, it's you learn a lesson pretty quickly that... And a lot of people, when they first get into acting and they go to their first audition, they think that they and you're given sides. Yeah. I think that every beginning actor thinks that you have to memorize it. You don't. That's not necessarily what they're looking for in terms of casting you. They're not looking for to see if you can memorize.
Can I be real with you for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
All a director is looking for in that first round audition. It has nothing to do with the performance or how they recite the sides. It's 100% about, is this person right? Is their type right? Like you were talking about, could I right. see them embodying this role? And then there's a little bit of, can they act yes or no really quickly? But
yeah.
Most first round auditions, you don't want to waste people's time. You want to be respectful of their time.
Yeah.
And you know very quickly whether or not they're a contender.
Right, right.
You know, and so all these, you know... you can just relax going into
this
first.
Yeah, exactly. And because you put a tremendous amount of pressure. And I did this when mm-hmm. at first I was like, I put all this pressure on myself to memorize it. And you underestimate, particularly as a beginning actor, how nervous you are when you walk into the
sure.
audition room. It's like you've got everything. You're sitting in the waiting room and it's like, man, I got this, man. I got this down pat, brother. And you walk in and you literally forget everything that you
right.
just...
Or there's like a casting director reading across from you who just yeah. does the most deadpan, like...
Oh, just so monotone. Right. And can barely hear what they're saying. You know what I mean? And I actually... I we'll get into more of our story yeah, yeah. here together. But a funny story. I came here when I first decided to go all in on the acting career, dude, I was going back and forth from Toledo to New York. I was driving back and forth 560 miles each way. Okay. And I had been, I was in Toledo and I got asked to audition for my first paid theater gig. Okay. And, so I was all fired up, man. You know what I mean? So I drive all the way back, you know, to go in and same thing. It's the first time I had actually auditioned. First time I had auditioned for a full production for theater. I had subsequently after that learned a lot of lessons and ended up, you know, okay. playing some great roles after that. But this was before I had done anything in theater.
What play?
And I don't even remember the name of the okay. play at this stage. It wasn't a major production here. It was an independent play, okay. But it was a paid gig, you know what I mean? And so I walked in there and I didn't have any sides with me. And it was the dude that wrote it and he had a casting director with him. And so I get up there and I start like reciting, you know, I start acting it out, you know what I mean? And I was just like, oh, you know, and so I start apologizing, which you should never apologize. That's one of the rules you learned. Don't apologize. Just keep going. You know what I mean? Make it up if you got to, you know? And so then I fumble through it again. He's like, where are your sides? And I was like, yeah, so I didn't bring them with me. And he's like, go out in the hallway and get the signs off the counter. Like he was really, I could tell, he was trying to be respectful of my time, but at the same time, I'm wasting his time at this stage. So I came in And so I read the rest of it, but it was, by this point, I'm already sweating bullets. Like my heart rate's, I'm pushing like 230, you know what I mean? And, so anyway, as I was leaving, he's like, let me give you a little bit of advice. Cause he's like,
oh dear,
you weren't horrible because it did seem believable when you knew what the lines were. He's like, but don't ever for the rest of your career, I don't care what you go to audition for, whether it's theater, movie, TV, whatever it is, don't ever walk into an audition without the signs. Ever.
Sure.
And I was just like, okay, duly noted. Right. You know, because I just drove 560 miles to just screw that up.
Having said that, one of the things we connected over was, you know, you have a great talent for improvising and elevating the words that are on the page and making them your own. And, you know, I think it's important for writers to never be precious with.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, if you're doing theater in Toledo, you're not William Shakespeare. Like, you know, exactly. I'd rather.
Yeah, exactly, man.
Rather hand it over to you.
So anyway, what I want to talk about is, you know.
Did I just offend anybody?
Probably everybody, but that's how you roll, man.
I was just like, shit. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to cut myself off right now.
But so anyway, you know, with you, and what as you started getting into, you know, you went to film school, okay,
yeah.
You went to Hofstra, but for you, what was the main genesis of wanting to become a writer and getting into writing for screenplays?
I was lucky. I knew what I wanted to do from a young age. You know, I'm talking 10 years old. I knew I wanted to be a writer. I loved movies my whole life. I knew I wanted to work in the arts. About the time I was in high school, 14, 15, I discovered, you know, foreign films, independent films. And I realized that you could make movies, more personal movies than I had been seeing by just going to, you know, Regal and Lowe's and all those theaters. And I said I wanted to do that. Now, the movies I started making when I was in high school with my buddies, you know, we would have like an hour before sports practice. We weren't going to really do. What motivated me to pick up the pen was, you know, I had some need for self-expression from an early age. Mm-hmm. And, but I wasn't going to make movies about my demons with my buddies before, you know, before lacrosse practice, you know, right, and we have an hour. So we made like, you know, here we are in upstate New York. I grew up in Ithaca, New York, making movies about gangsters and horror movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't really until film school where I was able to really, you know, start connecting with real actors in New York, really starting to work on the themes and the types of stories that I wanted to work on, which were much more personal.
Now, for the people that are listening in here, now, we did a project together. We did a film together called Family.
Did.
Yeah, a big one, man. Called Family Business. It's in post-production right now, and which is a great story, and we'll talk about that as we go on here. But, you know, I remember when we were in production of it, of course, we lived together essentially for a month.
Everybody.
It's
the rules. We got a sandbox, and we all went crazy over the course of a month, and we just played in that sandbox, you know?
Exactly. And it was amazing. And so we also got to know each other, and, you know, and one of the things that came out in the genesis of Family Business itself was the fact that you sat on it for like you took 3 years to write it, which I find interesting. And
raise the money.
Another reason for it to last that long. Yeah, exactly. Right. But, you know, what, as you were writing it, mm-hmm. When did it get to the point? Because if you want to, you can keep revising without going into production. Of course, there was a lot of revision afterwards, but after we started production. But when do you get to the point where you're like, okay, it's time to either, you know, poop or get off the pot here. Like, I'm either going to make this movie or I'm going to continue to write it for the next 15 years until I think it's perfect. But you're never going to think it's necessarily perfect because you always think you can do something better on it.
Right. Well, there's sort of two questions there. The first is, there's this myth in art that I reject that, oh, it's never going to be perfect. And I've been hearing a lot of this, you know, we're cutting the movie right now. And a lot of people who are close to me, people whose opinions I trust and people I love, and not a reflection on the piece itself, will just say to me, I'll be saying, oh, I don't know if it's ready for, you know, this next stage, or sending it out to salespeople, et cetera. And they'll say, oh, well, you know, it's never going to be perfect. And I say, oh, time out. It will be perfect, and I'm going to get it there.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that's, that is a thing with art. People think, oh, it's never going to, I reject
I kind of think it's a bit of an out. Right. I think that's why people say
most people don't finish their projects.
No, for
and
real.
And it's hard to get that last 4% out of the lemon when you're squeezing it. Mm-hmm. But it's the 1% of people who strive for that extra 4% mm-hmm. who become cultural phenomenons.
Yeah.
And most people don't push that extra 4%.
And so over the course of writing Family Business, how far into it of the 3 years were you like, okay, I'm ready? Of course, you need to raise money. But when did you think that like the script was ready to start moving forward on production?
It underwent a lot of different incarnations. I knew from the start. I didn't know from the start how much money I was going to be able to raise.
Right.
So I wrote in mind, I limited the number of the cast. I limited the number of locations. There were early drafts that had a family of 8.
Oh, wow.
And
8 is enough.
A number of locations. Yeah. But early on, as soon as I started doing the budget, I said, you know, there's no reason for that. And I took those 8 characters. I turned them into 4 characters, which is what we ultimately used for our story. Mm-hmm. And in that process of revising with budget in mind, those 4 characters became more 3-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So I wrote from the get-go knowing that this movie could be made on different scales. I knew I knew from the start, to answer your question directly, that it was a dynamite story. It was going to work.
Right.
But
and I agree.
Yeah. really great actors in this movie, by the way.
Well,
but I couldn't. But I mean, it is worth mentioning. Like I thought this movie was going to be realized on a more expensive scale early on, and we pivoted, and I realized I couldn't hit that number. I took it out to investors. I wasn't going to break. I raised an impressive amount of money, but I wasn't going to break escrow. Mm-hmm. And instead of going back to them and saying, "Hey, let's do this movie for this half amount of money," I said, I completely went to the other direction. I said, let's shoot this movie raw, gritty, handheld, in natural light. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to get one location and we'll live there for a month. Everyone will share ownership. But I knew the story worked from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it was about finding the situation budgetarily that like would allow us to realize the project.
And you knew from the beginning that you were going to shoot this in Ithaca, or had you put any thought into where you were going to film?
No, we ran the numbers everywhere. We ran the numbers for what it would look like in Canada. We ran the numbers for other states. Mm-hmm. We always knew it was going to be on the water. But New York State has great tax incentives. We were able, and a dollar goes further upstate. So we had,
I don't even know what a dollar is in New York City, man. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I do know that that $1 is a 99-cent slice of pizza over on 44th and 9th. Other than that, I really don't know what a dollar is in New York. So, moving it out into the country, I mean, obviously, you're going to get more bang for your buck, literally bang for your buck. And that's something that you have to take into consideration as you're even writing the screenplay, like you're saying, because you've got
right. A lot of people come out of film schools with scripts that are, you know, they want to make a gangster movie, they want to make an action movie, which is great, but it's like if you're going to go out, there's a lot of choices, but if you want to go out and produce your own film, you have to be realistic about what you're going to be able to achieve.
Right.
And you want it to
and what it's going to look like.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can't go out and shoot a movie that's going to be like Die Hard, for instance, and you got 10 grand to do it. I mean, it's not going to, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, we're going to cut for a commercial here in just a minute. But when we come back, I want to talk more about not necessarily the pre-production, but let's talk about the production, you know, from the auditioning process. That was awesome, and I was obviously intricately, you know, a part of, and actually the process of filming it up in Ithaca. So this is Kevin Barbaro. This is Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm here with my buddy, the Upstate Kid, here on TalkingAlternative.com, and we'll be right back here in just a second.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Come, join us for the 13th Annual Vigil for International Peace and Ecology on Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. A celebration of live music and dance performances, spoken word, a human peace sign, art installations, and a World Peace Flag ceremony that celebrates the United Nations International Day of Peace. That's Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Park, Nuremberg Bandshell, by the Bethesda Fountain. For more information or volunteer, go to www.vigil4internationalpeace.org. That's the number 4 in the URL, or call 212-222-5432. That's 212-222-5432. We'll see you there. Don't you know it's here?
That now is the key. Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative. Whoa.
Dude, I'm really digging the music, man. I know you told me to bring my own, but I don't know if I want to change this, man. This stuff is good, brother. I love it. That's my buddy Sam, man. Rocking the keyboard over there. But so anyway, to catch people up to speed here just on family business in general. I mean, Family Business is a feature-length movie that will hopefully right now debut or premiere in one or more of the festivals in the upcoming next year's festival season.
That's right.
And it's a family drama. It's about a family of four. I myself play the father, and it's a divorced father of two kids that are grown. And he and his wife have been divorced for about 10 years. And it's about him. The entire movie takes place over one day, Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
Yeah. And it's about him, you know, trying to figure out where he fits in, or if he fits in, and into the family structure, because there's a bit of a family crisis with the mother, and so why don't you talk a little bit about the plot?
The father,
what you want to give away, of course.
The father comes in on Christmas Day, and over the course of the day, he attempts to win back his family. And the drama sort of hinges on whether or not he'll be successful at doing that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you know, it's one of the things that I love about it is, well, first of all, I see a lot of myself, saw a lot of myself in the character of Kyle, the father, from the beginning, even from the audition process. So let's talk a little bit about about casting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the audition process itself, because this was actually the most time I spent auditioning for something. I usually, you know, it's kind of like one or two and done, you know, but this actually took a lot longer than that. And so why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, as you were looking for using my character as an example, as you were looking for Kyle, what was the process that you were going through?
One thing that's unique about casting a family drama, as opposed to any type of other story, is that you need to create a complete family unit, and you need everybody to fit together physically and in other ways too. So we had, you know, even though this was a low budget movie, I'm not going to give out the number, but an amount of money that if you spend 3 years trying to get a movie off the ground, you should be able to raise this
right.
amount of money.
Yeah, exactly.
And even though this was a low budget movie, everyone got paid, but we still had a hot demand for all of these roles. And we went to, you know, free casting websites, posted ads on, I don't even know what they were, Mandy.com, NowCasting.com, NYCActors.com, all people know, New York 411.
Right.
Posted ads. And we had something like 275 submissions for your part. From those people, we brought in about 75 for relatively quick first round auditions We don't want to waste their time. At the same time, they're coming in. For some of them, it's just an opportunity to kind of flex those acting muscles and
right.
and work. And also, even if they're not right for Kyle, they're on my radar now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I have... You know, good.
Oh, there's
memory.
A big benefit to auditioning in general.
Yeah, I shot a secret short film a month ago. By the way, we don't need to talk about that. But I called an actress back for that. That I had she had auditioned for me like 4 years ago. So
perfect.
They're on. Everyone is on my radar if I see them. And then I brought you back. Yeah, and in the audition rounds after that, it was more about playing with the character, talking about who Kyle was, talking about who you were, seeing how that matched up. And kind of just throwing some curveballs at you to see, you know, what sort of range you had, to be blunt. But then we do the whole, okay, I haven't offered you the role yet. Let's see if you can kick it kind of thing. And then we entered into the, let's go to the bar. We had a few meetings at bars.
Well, that's kind of how I roll.
Yeah. And then we continued to work on the character that way. Even after I offered you the part, you accepted the part. I remember we would show up and we would talk about what Ilya Kazan calls the facts of the scripts, but with, you know, a couple of Jamies in front of us. We picked it apart and we talked about who this guy was. And I feel like I gave you a lot of room to kind of make him your own. And
it was unique from my standpoint. Well, A of all, I can tell you that it was. What happens is you talk about the websites, you know, and every actor, and let me tell you something, if you're an actor in New York, I don't care where you're an actor. It doesn't have to be New York City. If you're an actor anywhere and you aren't on Actors Access, NY Castings, Backstage, all these different things that have a profile on there, and you're actively trying to see
you should out. Submit. You should submit to 15 auditions a day.
Dude, I submit all the time.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm always, I check it probably 5 times a day. I get the mobile updates. You know what I mean? So anyway, I went online one night and I had never heard of NY Castings. Okay.
Was that the one that we connected to?
Yeah. Through? Yeah. And so what ended up happening was I went on there. I made the pro. I didn't even have all my information on there. I had my headshot uploaded and I want to say that might've been almost it. I had only just kind of started, went through the casting calls and saw the casting for yours. And saw that it expired the next day. And it was the day the night before that it was supposed to expire that I had signed up for it. So I remember I even submitted to you and I said, listen, you know, because you gave the character description.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, if you want my resume, I can email it to you, but I literally just signed up for this, so whatever. And then you got back to me right away. And, you know, we set up the actual audition, you know what I mean? Had I not signed up for NY Castings that night, I don't know that I ever would have seen the casting call for this role.
Yeah.
And, which, to me, it's almost kind of karmic indicative of, like, the way that my life works, man. You know what I mean? Most great things in my life happen at the last second. But it's just a matter of putting yourself in the right place at the right time. So anyway, I remember going in. I remember reading for it with the script that you had given, with the sign that you had given. And I actually recall, because of the breakdown of the character and what the one scene that I did read with, I felt like I connected with the guy in general. And I want to say that I even may have reached out to you after the first one, because we were talking about you. Actually, you reached out to me to come back in.
Right.
For the first callback. You know what I mean? And I was actually the last person to audition on the first time I auditioned. I was the last person that day. It was getting late
because
we were getting booted out of there.
But we weren't having any part of that.
Yeah, no, we were just doing. Yeah,
there were
exactly.
Like 18 theater kids, kind of like.
It's like, hey man, hold the phone here.
All right.
I'm doing dope stuff in here.
Do we look like? Right. It's our time for the room. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, file the complaint. Hey, do I look like the kind of guy that cares? Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so I remember when you got back to me and you're like, hey, can we set up another time for you to come in? And you wanted it to be more, there was more actually like, can the guy act, I think, was the second round. You know what I mean? But I even told you, I think even then when I answered back to you, I was like, dude, whether I get this role or not, A of all, I think it's a great prime. I didn't know the whole script, but I knew kind of the gist, you know, from what sides I had. But I said, you know, I really feel like I kind of am this dude. I think I won't even say I said that. And I think that that may be, I think that came
I like talking about actors' backgrounds and auditions. And I have a lot of actor friends. I hang out mostly with actor friends, and I know a lot of them don't like that. They think that there should be a separation between, you know, the craft and, you know, who they
the
really
person.
Are. And
right.
for me, because the writing and the directing is such a personal experience, I like seeing actors who also like to work from a personal place. And so the fact that you right out of the gate were talking about how you related to the character and how you were kind of giving me notes in the second meeting about who you thought the guy was. And, you know, I responded to that.
Yeah. Because, you know, I felt like it was a guy at a crossroads in his life and we all have faults. The thing that attracted me about Kyle in general was the fact that it came across in the script that he was really an endearing guy. He's the kind of guy that when you meet him, like, you like him. He's friendly and he's outgoing and he's fun and he's funny, but maybe not the best dad in the world. Maybe not the best husband in the world. And dude, here's the deal, man. I am that guy. Okay. I mean, I hate to admit it. I mean, I'm getting better. My own son will tell you, like, I'm a different dad now. Honestly, dude, I'm going to tell you, I'm even a different dad now for having done this project than I was before that. Like, because what Kyle had to go through in this movie is that he had to come to grips with the fact that, dude, maybe you're not as nice of a guy as you think you are. You know what I mean? Maybe you're not. Maybe everything isn't okay because you just tell a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
You know
I mean? This might be, we'll talk more about this over some more Jamies later.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But I think I have a lot of sympathy for Kyle by the end of the movie, and I know people haven't seen the movie yet.
Right.
We're recording this right now, but I have a lot of sympathy for him, and I it was my MO from the get-go to write for human characters. You know, no good guys, no bad guys. Everybody has flaws, and we were able to talk about that while we rehearsed the scenes and work.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we spent a month together, as we talked about before. Yeah. In a bed and breakfast in upstate New York.
We rented out a bed and breakfast.
The whole thing, which was beautiful.
On the lake.
Oh, dude, the setting was amazing. Well, first
hot
of all,
tub.
I'd said many times, and we ended up meeting the lady that owned it.
Right.
Which
she goes, you can smoke, but not cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we weren't, I'm not even joking. Like, this lady was out there, man. And
Diane.
Chances are she's not going to listen to this, so we can kind of speak freely, but like, it was beautiful. She owned this big, beautiful bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
and all the land that led down to the water. And dude, every morning I would wake up. I'm from Vermont, man. I'm a hunter. I'm a fisher. Every day I'd wake up and I'd see like a giant herd, not just a herd, a gaggle of deer
mm-hmm.
mocking me because they knew I couldn't hunt them.
Yeah.
You know? And I even kind of casually mentioned to her, like, boy, it would really be kind of cool to hunt here. And the look I got,
she shot that down
pretty quick.
Welcome to Ithaca, man. We're pretty progressive up there.
Yeah. We'd rather just run into them with our cars because it's overpopulated.
Yeah, right.
But whatever.
Right.
But listen, we're going to come back. We got our final section here. I'll be back in a second here with my buddy upstate. I'm Kevin Barbaro. This is Coffee Talk 3.0. You're listening on talkingalternative.com. We'll be right back with you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. It's Coffee Talk 3.0, our final segment here. I'm sitting with my buddy Upstate. You can follow him on Twitter @the_UpstateKid. That's @the_UpstateKid. You're one of those dudes that, like, I was talking about this earlier. You know, when I was a coach, I would always come up with nicknames for people all the time, you know, and it would just kind of come to me. And literally in my life, this is one of my hidden talents. Okay. When I hit it big, and they're going to talk about me on, like, the Behind the Music.
Coffee Talk 40.0
or whatever. You know, it's going to be about my unique ability to give somebody a nickname that sticks with them to the point at which they're only known by that name. And so you're one of those dudes. It's just like you're just known
yeah.
by, because the nickname is the persona, baby. You know?
It was a film school nickname. That's
yeah.
where it came from.
And just
from.
Carries on, man.
Yeah.
So anyway, going back to family business, and I want to talk about a few things because we only have, you know, about 15 minutes left here in the show. But I want to talk about the other actors, you know, because
yes.
it was an amazing cast. And you talked earlier about when you cast a family drama. It's got to look like a family structure. And dude.
And most movies do not.
No, they don't.
And
you know,
I'll
yeah, there's some where you're just like, okay, how did the ginger end up in there? I don't think, you know, it's never really accounted for in the script. You know what I mean? You got all these Italians and like one Irish kid, you know, but this,
then
like,
the neighbors.
Dude, yeah. We look, yeah. They see the neighbors in their red hair, freckles, you know,
Ron Howard lives next door.
Exactly. And so anyway, we looked like we could be a family. I
yeah.
mean, it's amazing when people see this movie, when they see this film, they're going to be like, it really does look like we could be a family, not just in our physical stature and hair color and all that kind of stuff, but just kind of our demeanors,
mannerisms,
I mean,
traits,
the whole thing, dude. Yeah. It's
and you guys, it was part natural and part you guys developed that, and you know, it was from that time
well,
spent
together yeah.
incubating and that.
Well, one thing that you did have us do, which I thought was great, was every morning when we went to breakfast, we all ate our meals together. You had us in character, and you wanted us interacting in character. And I want to talk about the cast. You know, Shannon Burke, who plays my daughter. I mean, dude, what an amazing theater background. And
so talented. What a babe.
Yeah. Well, I can say that. I mean, you know, whatever. Anybody that knows my history, yep. Hello. in any event, Shannon's but amazingly talented. What an amazing voice, too. She's got a musical background, and she's from Boston. Yep. She's listening right now, which is wicked awesome that she's listening from Boston.
I hope she is.
I guarantee she is, man.
Yeah.
And so she plays my daughter, and Hugh Wilhelm.
Oh my God!
Who's equally as talented? Who plays my son Jamie in the movie? Let's talk about them a little bit and how you landed on them.
Yeah, Shannon's part was the same as yours. It was posted publicly, and there were over 200 submissions for the part. And Shannon was one of the last people we saw, and I was a little bit tired. I was a little bit. It was a different night than we were casting the first round of Kyle's, but I think she was the last on the night of the first rounds of the daughter
right
auditions. And I hate to admit it, I was a little bit tired. I wasn't really expecting to be wowed as much as I was wowed by her. And she's just, I can't even tell you, like, the you remember, she would just go there,
dude. Okay.
And
I'm
like,
gonna tell a quick little
story. Go ahead, please.
About Shannon. We have one particular scene, you know, it takes place over Christmas Day. So obviously Christmas dinner is involved, and there's a scene.
Or any great family drama, it leads up
to the table.
Yeah, it's a long day's journey into night, and it leads to dinner, yeah. And it's an important scene. And
there's an interaction between her and Kyle. And it really,
Kyle's your character.
Between her and the father, and it really kind of comes out, you know, the frustration that she's been building up for years, because she feels as though she's got a bit of a third wheel in the relationship between him and his kids, and so anyway, she had to get emotional. Now, we filmed this movie. One great thing about this movie, and there's many great things about the movie, but it was filmed with all natural light for the most part. I mean, we're talking 95% all natural light, which meant that we had to film night scenes at night and we had to film day scenes during the day.
Can I say something about that real
quick?
Go
for it, yeah.
A lot of people are doing that right now. What we did is we brought in Cesar Fay, who is incredibly talented,
yeah,
from Peru, and because he has shot amazing natural light movies before. And I asked him to be a part of the blocking. I never, ever, ever, ever in my career before have let a cinematographer be a part of the conversation between me and actors about how to block a scene. I would never. In this case, we said, wow, we only have natural light. Cesar, we want you to be there every single scene we rehearse. And he would say things like, hey, that's great, but could you try and play it over by the windows if that's okay with you guys? And then he would say to me, don't just play out the scene by the window because it's brighter. Play it out by the window and frame it from this angle, because then there's more contrast in the composition. I learned so much from working with Cesar Fay. Look him up. He's,
yeah, go to him.
Sorry, but
IMDb,
I didn't mean to,
yeah,
cut you off.
No,
but
no, he's
we
he's
were
the man.
So lucky to have him.
Dude, what an interesting, and the dude was from Peru.
I got him because every time I do a movie, I do a visual journal of what I want the movie to look like. I take screenshots and I journal on movies that I watch for, you know, again, it took me 3 years to get this movie off the ground. I journaled on every movie I watched. I sent him my notes of what I wanted this to look like visually. One of his movies, El Limpiador, The Cleaner in Peru, was in my visual journal. And he posted what I wrote about his work in that movie on his Facebook page. And it got picked up by a blog in Peru. And this was before... So I journaled on his compositions.
That's great.
A blog picked it up, and he was like, okay, I'll come do your movie.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. it was so amazing working with him. And dude, we're going to have future projects with him. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. And getting back to, you know, the whole dinner scene,
sure,
and, you know, filming at night, Shannon had to be emotional. Now, we started filming this at 10 o'clock at night, and the goal was to kind of wrap up by about 4 a.m., and so we got all the way through, and there was one particular scene where there's an interaction between her and her father, and I was so moved, dude. I'm telling you, all of the interactions between all the actors, I feel like we all made each other better actors. There was a lot of growth that was going on, but I was so moved by her being so emotional. I literally completely lost myself in the character itself. And I felt like I was her dad, more so than any other part of the filming over the month, and I started to get emotional. I really felt like this was my own kid. You know what I mean? And so it was amazing. And then and also with Hugh Wilhelm, who plays Jamie, my son in there, the same deal at the dinner table. There's a great scene, and it's just he's so emotional, and what he brought to his character was staggering.
He's that kid is talented at everything he's ever done.
When
he was 14 years old, he was an MLB prospect. He studied acting for a while. While we were shooting, he was a student at Cornell University.
Yeah.
He was doing his homework in character as James. He was turning in poetry assignments and English assignments as his character.
Unreal.
The guy's out of control.
And then my ex-wife is played by Liza Van Court.
So talented.
Amazing. Dude, and she's like the woman in Ithaca, man. Let's be honest.
Right.
Acting instructor, owns her own acting school and a theater background. And just
so she was kind of the first one I brought onto the cast, because I knew we were going to be shooting in Ithaca by that time. We had the location first, and I offered it to her. She didn't even have to audition. And then we came down to New York, and that's where we got you guys, and we built the cast and the family around her.
Dude, it was amazing. So quickly, because we only have a couple of minutes here, I want to talk about, it's in the editing phase now. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the editor and kind of how that's going.
Oh, man. Okay. Heather Smith, so talented. I was introduced to her long before, long before I connected with you.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to take the movie out to more of a name actor.
Right.
And Heather was a reader for that name actor.
Yeah.
And there was about a year-long period where I was trying to get this other actor to read the script. And Heather, first of all, she kept saying, oh, he just hasn't read it yet. He hasn't read it yet. 12 months in, I get an email from Heather. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if that actor read it. She goes, hey, I actually hadn't read the script up until now. It's really good.
A year
later. She goes, I'm going to really recommend it to him now. And by that point, the money had fallen through. I said, no, let's just, you know, let's preserve the relationship. I'll show it to him when we're done. She has this whole career as a producer. Mm. When the movie was done, I wrote to her. I wrote to a lot of people saying, look, I'm looking for an editor now. Do you know anybody? She said, hey, do you mind if I throw my own hat in the ring? I've been producing for about 15 years. I feel a little uncreative. I want to start editing. And so, I mean, she's a dynamite producer. She just produced Seymour, an Introduction that Ethan Hawke directed. I saw it 2 days ago at New York Film Festival. It sold at Telluride 4 weeks ago.
Exactly.
She's
being named as a possible Oscar contender.
It's been talked about.
Yeah, talked about. So in any event, there's a lot of great things that are going on with the movie and with the film and with your career. And dude, I'm telling you, man, I'm so happy that to be a part of it, brother, and being cast. And dude, I'm so excited that you are the first guest on Coffee Talk 3.0, brother. Yeah, man. So in any event, we're going to be back next week, obviously, here at 2 p.m., 2 to 3 o'clock on talkingalternative.com. My guest next week is going to be actually my agent, Brad Lyon, as we are right now in production on a new TV series called Roommates. It's actually filming as of starting today. It's in production back in Michigan. So he's going to be my guest next week right here on TalkingAlternative.com. And you can also check out the podcast at TalkingAlternative.com or go to coffeetalk.podomatic.com. You can follow me at Barbaro Acting. That's B-A-R-B-A-R-O Acting, all one word. And dude, I'll see everybody next week, baby. We got one in the books, brother.
Thanks, Kev.
You got it, man. Give me some love. All right. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Come, join us for the 13th Annual Vigil for International Peace and Ecology on Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. A celebration of live music and dance performances, spoken word, the human peace sign, art installations, and a world peace flag ceremony that celebrates the United Nations International Day of Peace. That's Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Park, Nuremberg Bandshell by the Bethesda Fountain. For more information or volunteer, go to www.vigil4internationalpeace.org. That's the number 4 in the URL. Or call 212-222-5432. That's 212-222-5432. We'll see you there. Don't you know it's here?
That now is the key. You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.